Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Vicor Earnings Results for the Fourth Quarter and Year Ended December 31st, 2014 conference call. My name is Stephanie, and I will be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. We will conduct a question-and-answer session toward the end of this conference, and if at any time during the call you require assistance, please press star followed by zero, and an operator will be happy to assist you. As a reminder, this call is being recorded for replay purposes. I would like to turn the call over to your host for today, James Sims, CFO, and Dr. Patrizio Vinciarelli, CEO. Please proceed. Your host for today, Mr. James Sims, CFO, and Dr. Patrizio Vinciarelli, CEO. Please proceed.
Thank you, Stephanie. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Vicor's conference call for the fourth quarter and full year ended December 31st, 2014. As mentioned, I'm Jamie Sims, CFO, and with me here in Andover are Patrizio Vinciarelli, CEO, and Dick Nagel, our Chief Accounting Officer. Today we issued a press release summarizing our financial results for the fourth quarter and the full year. This press release is available on the Investor Relations page of our website, www.vicorpower.com. We also have filed a Form 8K with the Securities and Exchange Commission in association with issuing this press release. I'll now proceed with our customary safe harbor statement. I remind listeners this conference call is being recorded and is the copyrighted property of Vicor Corporation. I also remind you various remarks we make during this call may constitute forward-looking statements for purposes of the safe harbor provisions under the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Our forward-looking statements are subject to risks and uncertainties that may cause actual results to differ materially from those explicitly set forth or implied in our statements. Such risks and uncertainties are discussed in our most recent Forms 10-K and 10-Q filed with the SEC. Please note the information provided during this conference call is accurate only as of the date of the call. Vicor undertakes no obligation to update statements made during this call, and you should not rely upon them after the conclusion of the call. A replay of the call will be available beginning at midnight tonight through March 10, 2015. The replay dial-in number is 888-286-8010, and the passcode is 265-64337. In addition, a webcast replay of the conference call will shortly be available on the Investor Relations page of our website. I'll start this afternoon's discussion with a review of our financial performance, and Patrizio will follow with his comments, after which we will take your questions. As set forth in this afternoon's press release, Vicor recorded a net loss for the fourth quarter that we are characterizing as nil, representing 0 cents per share on revenue of $60.7 million. For the third quarter, we recorded a net loss of $3.7 million, representing a loss per share of 10 cents on revenue of $58.4 million. Sequentially, revenue increased 4%, and we reduced our operating loss from $4.1 million to $178,000, due in part to a quarterly decline in legal fees of approximately $1.6 million. During the quarter, a $3 million auction rate security was redeemed at par value, and the associated reversal of the credit loss reserves accrued against the security was reversed, contributing to income. After income taxes and elimination of the portion of our results associated with subsidiaries in which we hold a minority interest, our net loss was de minimis. For the full year 2014, we recorded a net loss of $13.9 million on revenue of $226 million. For 2013, we had a net loss of $23.6 million on revenue of $199 million. 2013 results were skewed by the over $10.2 million increase in our allowance against our deferred tax assets that was recorded in Q4 of that year. 2014 results were influenced by full-year charges of $2.2 million associated with the closure of our manufacturing facility in Sunnyvale, California, and by over $10 million of legal fees incurred as a result of intellectual property litigation. The year-over-year increase in revenue represents growth of 13.3%, with all business units contributing. As mentioned, consolidated revenue for the fourth quarter rose 4% sequentially, reflecting a high volume of turns, which rose to represent 42% of total revenue. Given the scheduling challenges of Q4 holidays, this increase in turns volume is an indication of the strength and flexibility of our mass customization model, which allows us to quickly fill sometimes volatile customer demand. The brick business unit recorded a 1.6 sequential increase in revenue as higher shipments across entities within the BBU were offset by a decline in shipments of our custom systems. BBU bookings increased 6.4% with improvement across regions and markets. North American shipments of our legacy modules improved, and bookings for the region increased sharply, which we hope is an indication that uncertainty that has long influenced domestic customers in industrial, transportation, and infrastructure markets may be lifting. European shipments declined, but activity was decidedly country-specific, reflecting economic and political uncertainties. Booking patterns were also country-specific, but increased over 5% sequentially, which, again, we hope is an indication of improving confidence in that region. Asian shipments and bookings declined for the BBU. While the BBU experienced improved activity in markets such as Korea, Malaysia, Singapore, and Australia, shipments and bookings for China declined for the quarter. As stated last quarter, we believe the Chinese market for our DC to DC converters, which is heavily oriented towards transportation and infrastructure applications, has softened due to the well-publicized efforts of central planners to manage economic growth. Japan has been steady in booking in shipments, but we have recorded dollar-based declines due to yen translation losses. Recall that Japan is the only foreign country in which we sell in a currency other than dollars. The transition of Westcore manufacturing to Andover is now complete, and we began building Westcore systems here in January. I'll take this opportunity to publicly thank the members of the Westcore and Andover teams from operations, IT, HR, and accounting, who orchestrated and completed a very successful transition process. Turning to VI Chip, revenue increased 2.6% to $10.2 million for the fourth quarter, reflecting shipments in the data center space. The diversity of our VI Chip customer base improved, with a third of shipments to customers in test and measurement, industrial, and defense electronics markets. Because of the significant VI Chip bookings of the third quarter, fourth quarter bookings, while still very healthy and ahead of second quarter bookings, actually declined. Listeners may recall I have cautioned against inferring much meaning from sequential bookings comparisons for VI Chip, as its lead times are longer than those of the BBU. PICOR enjoyed a strong quarter with 57% sequential increase in revenue. Record third-party revenue of $3.9 million is representative of the successful ramp of PICOR's merchant business based on its SIP regulators, many of which are sold side-by-side with chip modules as part of a power system solution. As was the case with VI Chip, PICOR's bookings declined for the quarter, reflecting the high bookings of the third quarter. Recognized distribution for revenue for Q4 was flat sequentially after the 22% increase of Q3. Distribution revenue tends to slow during the holiday season, so this pause in growth was not a surprise. Our efforts to expand our volumes through traditional distribution channels continue. Concluding on consolidated revenue, international revenue rose 9%, reflecting sustained volumes of VI Chip and PICOR shipments to Asian contract manufacturers and the aforementioned balance of European and Asian volumes. VICOR's consolidated gross margin percentage for Q4 was off slightly, declining to 43% from 43.7%. A volume-driven increase in product-level profitability was more than offset by unfavorable manufacturing cost variances, notably those associated with the closure of Westcore. With the transition of Westcore manufacturing to Andover now completed, we anticipate meaningful improvement, possibly as soon as the second quarter of 2015, in product margins for the Westcore AC product line as we leverage our existing infrastructure for the manufacture of DC configurable products in Andover. Turning to Q4 operating expenses, recurring research and development, marketing and sales, and general administrative expenses declined 5.9%, driven, as mentioned, by lower legal fees. However, our operating model Excluding legal costs and unusual costs associated with one-off occurrences, such as the closure of Westcor, is nearing a level of stability, as we believe we have the personnel and infrastructure in place to support our business plan. As Patrizio has spoken to before, much of the research element of R&D is behind us, and as such, our prototyping costs have stabilized and in some areas declined. R&D headcount has been stable for 2 years, and R&D expenditures should remain close to current levels. Similarly, marketing and sales expenses are expected to plateau soon, as the global build-out of our sales and application support infrastructure is nearing completion. There will always be a variable element of marketing and sales expenses, namely sales commissions for our non-stocking channel partners, but an increase in such expenses is a problem we want to have. Finally, regarding general and administrative expenses, the major driver of increased spending for 2014 has been legal fees associated with IP litigation. These fees, along with charges associated with the closure of Sunnyvale, have represented a significant majority of increases in our G&A for 2014. Other expenses, such as those associated with the functions of finance and accounting, IT, and HR, are well managed and in some notable instances declining. Our number one expense is compensation. Total headcount was 1,014 at December 31st, down a net 29 from 1,043 at September 30th, reflecting the closure of the Sunnyvale operation. At year-end 2013, total headcount stood at 1,002. The sequential net increase for the year consisted largely of new hires in worldwide sales and marketing and DI chip manufacturing in Andover. Recently, our calculation of quarterly income taxes has been uncharacteristically straightforward. The Q4 calculation was especially so, as the very modest pre-tax income total for the quarter meant we needed little adjustment for Q4 to the Q3 calculation of our estimated annualized benefit. As discussed during previous investor calls, we fully reserved against our domestic deferred tax assets at year-end 2013, the consequence being a near-term inability to create additional tax benefits from pre-tax losses. Net operating loss carryforwards generating during 2014 have been added to our balance of deferred tax assets, but the allowance against these carryforwards has been increased to fully cover the value. Given our existing loss position and recent history, we do not foresee any change to how we are accounting for carryforwards and our fully reserved deferred tax assets. Until we return to sustained profitability, we will continue to report tax provisions in this current manner. Turning to cash flow for Q4, operations generated $740,000, which is a somewhat misleading figure. While net working capital experienced an unfavorable $2 million swing, representing a use of cash, most of the change was not operationally driven, but due to a year-end decline of $3.9 million in a mix of accrued compensation and accrued expenses. Receivables and inventory didn't meaningfully change for the quarter, and I'll return to both of those in a moment. Capital expenditure for the quarter rose to $2.3 million from $1.4 million for the prior quarter, largely reflecting the build-out of Andover manufacturing space to accommodate Westcor production and to expand line capacity for chip production. We are not forecasting a meaningful change in the average level of recent capital expenditures for the coming several quarters. Manufacturing is now fully consolidated in Andover, and our operational teams have proven to be quite skilled at capacity management, most notably in support of new products. Turning to our consolidated balance sheet, our receivables portfolio remains in excellent shape, with day sales falling to 40 days from the prior quarter's 43 days. Consolidated inventories quarter to quarter declined, with annualized turnover climbing to 4.6 times, representing yet another new high. Aside from the aforementioned Westcor inventory charge, there were no meaningful changes to either accounts receivable or inventory reserves. Cash and short-term investments stood at $55.5 million, up from $53.7 million at the end of Q3. This figure excludes investment securities with a par value of $3 million carried on our balance sheet at an estimated fair value of $2.6 million. representing roughly 86% of par value. As mentioned, we received a full redemption at par value during Q4 of the only other remaining auction rate security we held. Since the 2008 financial crisis and the collapse of the auction rate securities market, our patience has paid off as we have received approximately $40 million of redemptions, all at par value. During the period we held each of these securities, all interest was paid, sometimes at higher rates than otherwise available to us. Turning to our expectations for the first quarter of 2015, we are forecasting higher revenue, which we expect to drive improved product-level margins. As I alluded to earlier, our operating expense structure is largely established, so the primary variable impacting profitability for Q1 likely will be legal fees. Since the trial date was postponed indefinitely, there has been little activity. As such, we are expecting our first quarter expense profile to be somewhat like that of the fourth quarter. We do not expect any additional charges associated with the Westcor move, nor do we anticipate any unusual transactions to influence results. I must caution listeners regarding expected revenue levels over the first and second quarters of 2015. As of today, our backlog supports our forecast for the first quarter, but our shipping schedule is uncertain as customers are asking for volumes scheduled for Q2 shipment to be accelerated into Q1. Accommodating these requests would raise Q1 revenue. I have cautioned listeners for some time to be aware that our bookings can be irregular, with large volumes of long horizon orders placed at one time, followed by periods of low bookings. Now I am cautioning that shipment schedules may be irregular as well, at least for the foreseeable future. Given the uncertain timing of transitions by server OEMs and their contract manufacturers from VR 12.5 to VR 13.0, and our footprint being expanded in certain applications to encompass memory rails in addition to processors, quarterly sequential revenue comparisons may be ripe for surprises. Now I'll turn the call over to Patricio.
Thank you, Jamie. As Jamie addressed, Q4 was characterized by rising shipments of our 48-volt chip VTM and CPRM solution powering Intel processors. Increasing contributions from VRChip and Picor were complemented by steady results from the BRIC business unit. While lower legal fees contributed to our break-even Q4, I'm pleased the quarter confirmed the leverage of our business model. Volume-related efficiencies are reaching a level at which incremental profits will flow through to pre-tax earnings. While quarterly performance will vary because of product mix, we're reaching a point with expanding production of our new products at which our fixed costs will be efficiently absorbed by revenue levels. To gain additional momentum, Vicor is entering a phase that will be characterized by introduction of a comprehensive array of game-changing products. Throughout 2015, the pace at which we introduce these highly differentiated new products will accelerate. These products will enable end-to-end implementation of factorized power solutions across a broad range of applications requiring high power density, high efficiency, and improved market-leading design flexibility. Families of chip BCMs, NBMs, DCMs, and VTMs are scheduled for release as additional members of our family of market-leading SIP point-of-load regulators. For chassis mount front-end applications upstream of the point-of-load, we will roll out next-generation system solutions called VIAs for Vicor integrated adapters, which we recently profiled at Electronica. VIAs incorporate chips within mechanically and thermally adept packages. Among the game changers in the VIA family are PFM-based AC-DC converters, as well as BCM, NBM, and DCM DC-DC converters. Architected with ease of use in mind, VIA front ends will provide attractive power system solutions across a multiplicity of markets, and, as I've highlighted in the past, should contribute to the reinvigoration of our performance in the markets traditionally served by the BRIC business unit. We expect our novel front-end and BRIC-like products to revitalize the BBU with its mass customization model based on highly efficient and flexible manufacturing. I previously emphasized the effort we made in developing sophisticated online design and configuration tools for use within our new product platforms. These tools are particularly applicable to our mass customization capabilities, which are at the core of the BBU value proposition. BBU customers will be provided with new chip-based solutions with a state-of-the-art look and feel, offering substantial improvement in efficiency, power density, and scalability, unmatched by legacy BRICs and our competitive offerings. During the fourth quarter of 2014, we took further steps towards securing significant design wins for our chip and SIP system solutions for board-mounted applications, notably in providing power for memory rails at the point of load. We also advanced the capabilities of our high-input voltage chip front-end modules. Our focus is centered on an expanding customer base of data center and server customers utilizing a 48-volt bus architecture. However, we're also pursuing design wins for a broad range of other applications. For example, I direct listeners' attention to the recent announcement by Advantest Corporation recognizing Vicor with the Technology and Innovation Award, reflecting Vicor's role as a strategic supplier of high-performance via chips for Advantest's leading semiconductor test platforms. Test and measurement is an important market for Vicor, and we play a key role with customers such as Advantest by providing power system solutions that enable state-of-the-art levels of performance and total cost of ownership. Just like Jamie offers caution regarding the interpretation of our remarks, I also caution listeners regarding the revenue expectations for the new products I've highlighted. Given design and cycle for sales, significant contributions to revenue from these products will occur starting in 2016. Finally, as I mentioned last quarter, our discussions with potential licensees and partners for either market penetration or capacity expansion remain a priority. There are certain markets and applications for which a licensing model is preferred. For example, the use of VHIP modules in satellite applications requires design adaptation to achieve radiation hardening of circuits for use in outer space. We have licensed our VHIP technology to a leading vendor of satellite electronics for use in space applications, from which we have begun to generate the royalty stream. We're pursuing similar opportunities in other vertical markets. With regard to partnering for production or otherwise achieving scale faster than we would on our own, we're also evaluating a range of collaborative arrangements. We have the ability to scale up our own manufacturing capacity, and as Jamie addressed, we have proven quite adept at redirecting resources or otherwise identifying opportunities for increased capacity and production efficiencies without major capital expenditures. However, our business plan is based on ramping production of a vast array of new products, and the forecast volumes imply we'll need to step up capacity in 2016 and 2017. To conclude my prepared remarks, we're approaching our long-established goal of enabling a broad range of power system solutions, from the power source to the point of load, based on a combination of vias at the chassis level and chips and SIPs at the board level, establishing Vicor as a truly differentiated vendor of comprehensive integrated power system solutions, offering the highest performance at a very compelling cost. This concludes my prepared remarks, and Jamie and I will now take your questions. Operator.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, press star 2. Questions will be taken in the order received. Please press star 1 to begin. And your first question comes from the line of John Dillon. Please proceed.
Hey, guys. Congratulations on a pretty good quarter.
Thank you.
In regard to the PFM, Patrizio, and your VIAs, can you talk to us a little bit about what kind of markets that you're going to be able to place those in? Are they, is it going to be a specialty market, or is this going to be like wide-ranging markets?
So the initial traction is taking place, is taking place to some degree in a particular market that is emerging. I will not define what that market is for competitive reasons, but we see a broadening range of opportunities for PFM products in the VIA package. To be more specific, we're getting initial production orders for the version of the PFM that was introduced some time ago as a double chip device in a brick package, a more traditional type of brick, whose cost structure and power density levels are far surpassed. The cost structure being lower, the density being higher, with the VIA counterpart leveraging a chip type of device in a 6123 package. So we expect that as we roll out new types of PFM VIA products, that we're going to be able to build on the initial traction that we've already gathered with the earlier generation versions of the PFM using more classic brick type packaging.
Well, I guess what I'm asking, though, is I know you talked about microcells before, but are you going to be able to place these in, like, the switch market in telecommunications, or servers going to be able to – are you going to be able to address the server market? You know, historically in the AC to DC, you've been very niche-oriented, and I'm just wondering, are you cost-effective enough now to hit a much broader market? And in the same line of questioning, I'm just wondering, is this like a $2 million a year business, or is this a $50 million a year business? Or can you just give us some kind of color on that?
Yeah, so stay focused first on the issue of cost effectiveness. As I suggested in answer to your first question, we are making a first significant step in the right direction in terms of further improvements in performance and reduction in cost measure in terms of cents per watt with the first VIA PFMs that are about to be introduced, both the 48 volt output and the 24 volt output PFM leveraging what's called the 6123 chip. This is aimed at the 400 watt level, and at 400 watts as compared to the 330 watt level of the earlier double chip PFM, we are increasing the power capability while at the same time reducing the cost structure significantly. So that will broaden the market opportunity both in microcells and other types of applications that are keen on achieving high power density, low profile, and certain other attributes of our PFM product strategy. But there is a further level of advance that is very far along in the making, and which will raise the power capability well beyond 400 watts with a cost structure that will come down commensurately with increases in power levels. And that's going to have an even greater reach. So I think the answer to your question is layered and a function of generation of products and time. But our strategy with respect to AC to DC products is not a niche strategy. It's a broad-based strategy. We believe we're going to have as we do now, for instance, at the point of load, empowering Intel processors, not just the best performance, but also the overall most cost-effective solution.
Okay, do you think this might be a $2 million a year business, or like?
Sorry, implicitly answer your question. Obviously, our solution at the point of load is far, far greater than that, and likewise, I expect similar opportunities in the AC/DC area. And you should bear in mind that that is actually a very, very large market. It is, in one way of looking at it, in one way of categorizing, you know, the total power system market, the biggest market.
Well, that's exactly why I'm asking the question. So, I mean, this seems like it could be a game changer for Vicor, but I just want to make sure I don't, you know, I'm not reading something into it that I shouldn't.
Game changing claims are obviously to some degree presumptuous. Assertions to make, and we don't make them lightly. We believe that for both point-of-load solutions, where we gathered significant traction, is already reflected in major revenue generation, and in these other classes of applications with product capabilities and technology that are equally revolutionary, that we have a corresponding opportunity, and these are all in effect part of a very orchestrated strategy that has as a common denominator theme enabling modular solutions, a modular power component methodology for power systems, such that, you know, customers in all major end markets are going to be able to address their power system requirements with modular building blocks that have the requisite scalability, performance, and cost effectiveness. And that entails the combination of DC-to-DC solutions at the point of load, AC-to-DC solutions in the front ends, and in between. Those two.
And the PFM, when do you expect that to be out?
We've had the PFM out as a double chip PFM for some time.
Right.
As I mentioned, we are making good progress with that with a number of customers, and we're going to be making announcements very soon with respect to two new VIA products that are PFM based.
Great. Okay. Jamie, I got a question for you. It sounded like you were cautioning us that this quarter may be better than we expect. But then on the other hand, I heard Patrizio say that cautioning us that it will take till 2016 for some of these new products to really hit a growth spurt. Can you give me a little more clarification on what exactly you're trying to relay to us in those two statements?
So let me address that. My comments of a month ago regarding the new products being introduced this year, not generating significant revenues until next year, did not in any way negate earlier suggestions regarding the opportunity for revenue growth this year, because that's predicated on products that we've been working on or were introduced last year or have been recently introduced. So I think what should be noted is that because of the fact that the R portion of our R&D major effort, in which we've invested $250 million over a long time frame, is essentially behind us, and we're now in the primarily development phase, the rate on new product introductions is accelerating, is already accelerated, and is going to continue to accelerate as we harvest the fruits of an effort that has been in the making for quite some time.
And it sounds like from Jamie's comment, you know, we're pretty well into the first quarter. It sounds like you're going to have a pretty good first quarter. Is that what I heard, Jamie?
Well, I think what's good is, to some extent, the function of expectations. I don't want to get pinned down with respect to that, but I think you heard the earlier comments, and we mean what we say.
So you're cautioning us that we could see what I think I heard. I just want to make sure I think you heard
that we expect growing revenues in Q1.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you.
And we have a next question coming from Jim Bartlett. Please proceed.
Given the question that John just asked, in the last conference call, Patrizio, you gave a level of confidence of in 2016 of achieving a milestone of something like 50% in the first quarter and 90% in the second. Would that change now?
No. We are on track to achieving the key milestone that I think we characterize loosely as breakaway revenue levels. With that same confidence level in the same time frame. There's been no change with respect to that. Things are propelling along without slippages in support of that goal.
You also mentioned on the Syncor litigation that the trial had been delayed indefinitely. What's behind that?
Well, this has been, a fairy tale of sorts. I think that the fairy tale that comes to mind is the emperor that wears no clothes. I think what's been happening in Texas with the Texas District Court, and by the way, more recently with the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals in Washington, D.C., is that they come to realize that the emperor wears no clothes. And what I mean by that there are no valid patents that Vigo could possibly infringe. And beyond that, I would say that the naked emperor is an ugly character that should be punished for his past abuse of power in the judicial system. So I think those kinds of realizations are underlying what may be going on with respect to things getting put off.
And was there also a new judge appointed that may have something to do with it or not?
I can't comment with respect to that. I think the fact that the summary judgment phase has taken as long as it has and caused the postponements last year is indicative of the complexity of the issues and the fact that the magistrate judge has seen the plaintiffs in a new light.
Going to another subject, when you were talking about the first quarter revenues maybe being more because the customer pulled forward some requirements from the second quarter. Is this one large customer doing this, or is this several customers?
I think in some instances we are seeing pull-ins or the desire for pull-in. Obviously, we're dealing with a very large multiplicity of customers overall, so I think the fact that some are pulling in doesn't imply that they're all pulling in. So we got a complex situation when it comes to that. But net-net, in terms of the revenues for the quarter, the push is for the revenues to rise above our forecast level, our internal forecast level.
One final question. There's obviously an awful lot of publicity about the data center space, and Amazon and Microsoft and others. Could you just give us some of your insights into new developments in the data center world and how that's affecting you?
Well, I think that we're seeing a broadening interest with respect to the benefits of a 48-volt backbone or 48-volt infrastructure. As I'm sure you're familiar with, there's a classic type of perspective to this with early adopters and other companies that are, in effect, less willing to be on the forefront of an initiative that is worthwhile, but follow developments by the early adopters and want to capture similar benefits. So we're seeing that happening, things again are percolating along in that general sense with a number of companies that are major internal users of large data centers.
Thank you.
And your other question comes from the line of John Dillon. Please proceed.
Patrizio, in regard to the data centers again, I know you've got the one big data center that you've talked about, and then there's I know you've been talking to a number of others. How close are we to a second data center customer coming on board, or are you under contract with another data center?
I think that we're going to see a multiplicity of opportunities with the VR13, which is, as you know, the next generation of Intel processors going into production in 2016.
So can I infer from that you've got the one data center customer and you'll probably stay with that one until 2016, where you'll pick up some additional data center customers?
I think that's too granular a statement for me to be able to make. I think I've gone far enough in suggesting that we see the data center space transitioning more and more to a 48-volt system because of its benefits. And I would say on a related front, the front-end portion of the power system infrastructure, there too we see a growing trend towards high voltage DC buses, which also fits very well within our total power system strategy. So at the point of load or close to the point of load, and when I say the point of load in terms of direct 48 to 1 volt for memory or 1.8 volt for processor type applications, we see a growing trend because of its benefits. We've been working closely with a variety of key partners, both users of these kinds of systems, as well as the makers of the components that get sold in terms of processor and memory solutions to enable the systems. So there is progress on that general front, and likewise, we're making progress in the front-end space in terms of bridging the gap from the power source to the point of load with a very comprehensive and integrated strategy.
So in the front end, are you talking about like 400 volts down to 48 volts? Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah, we're talking about both AC conversion, as we talked at the beginning of the question-answer session, as well as 380-volt distribution as a stepping stone to 48-volt.
So there could be an AC to DC solution for data centers? Is that what I'm hearing?
I guess what I'm saying, well, there's obviously AC-to-DC solutions in the data centers today. But,
yes.
But
yes,
we're,
but
seeing,
for
we're seeing whether it's data centers or other types of systems in communications, as an example, we're seeing and we're partnering with leading companies in that space that have their own infrastructure, which is going to be starting to use a 380 volt bus in the not too distant future.
Okay. And do you have any additional large server companies, OEM server companies that you're supplying to now?
We are making progress with companies that are in the server business as well. But, you know, I'm not prepared to make any definitive statement today with respect to that. But bottom line, that which works for the companies that are vertically integrated in terms of data centers also works for companies that are manufacturers of servers of one form or another.
Yes, okay. And you used the term in the press release today, an NBM. I've not heard that term before. Can you tell us what an NBM is?
Yeah, so this is a proprietary device for which Vicor holds intellectual property, which has to do with fixed ratio conversion without isolation. And okay. with a non-isolated bus module, that's what NBM stands for, what we can do is raise further the bar with respect to efficiency and power density. So we have initial devices that are about to be introduced that will bring the power capability of a device 61 millimeter by 23 millimeter all the way up to 2.4 kilowatts with unprecedented efficiency and power density and cost effectiveness. So the ability of these devices to, you know, process power very efficiently, very cost effectively is enhanced by a non-isolated architecture. We have already established with some key customers the fact that fixed ratio conversion can be successfully deployed without isolation, and we're about to roll out the first two products that perform that function, again, with unprecedented level of efficiency, density, and cost effectiveness, because, in effect, as we raise the bar on the power capability of a chip of a given size, we can, at the same time, reduce the cost per watt, the cents per watt, in inverse proportion. So, case in point, we have two new BCMs that are about to be introduced, K140, K16, which are in the 1,500 watt range. The K15 and the K13, which are non-isolated counterparts, raise the bar all the way up to 2.4 kilowatts, with a cost structure that is very comparable. So the cents per watt goes down in inverse proportion. And the efficiency gets up to 98.5%.
And what type of markets will that be going into?
Communications, once again, they could play a role in data centers. For some of them, automotive, K13 in particular.
Excellent, okay. And regarding automotive, can you give us an update on how you're doing with automotive?
We're making progress with relatively small scale, but still significant in terms of early penetration. Wins that are approaching initial production this year. We have, as you've heard in the past, developments in the works that raise the bar on density, efficiency, and cost effectiveness that are going to be opening up more opportunities. You know, the traditional requirement in that space, there's been an area of great focus, has involved high voltage, such as typically 300-volt bus down to 12-volt. But there are greater and greater requirements for some automotive systems that involve a lower voltage conversion from a 48-volt type of bus to 12-volt. One of the NBMs plays potentially an important role with respect to that because of its extremely high density, efficiency, and cost effectiveness, with or without companion PRMs or pre-regulator modules, either in unidirectional or bidirectional type of systems.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome.
And you have another question coming from the line of Don McKenna. Please proceed.
Patricio, I've read about both Microsoft and Apple, you know, developing the solar farms to power their data centers. Does that have any implication for you at all? I mean, would it be a net positive opportunity, negative, or just a neutral?
You know, we're not directly involved at this time with that, with any of that. But I think, generally speaking, trends such as the one you're pointing to only go in the direction of expanding the opportunity for advanced modular solutions to power system requirements. And
okay.
And that's an area that we are investigating, but is not being part of our focus of effort.
What is your capacity utilization rate now in Andover?
Our capacity utilization at the factory two review just within the last week, and our capacity utilization is expanding, but capable of significantly greater expansion. We have suggested in the prepared remarks, you know, various degrees of freedom with respect to significant further expansions. You know, there's a strong opportunity for chips production rates as we get from 2015 to 2016 to undergo a multiple of three, potentially greater than that, 3X. And we know how to accomplish that in a variety of ways. We're diligently pursuing a comprehensive strategy to accomplish that.
And is the multiple of 3X, is that before you do your, you know, additional, as we talked in the last quarter, expansion, you may be even in need of a capital raise to do that overseas?
Well, so we're looking at a variety of options, and the options involve further expansion, to the earlier point, of our tall capacity within the main factory in Andover, where we have 250,000 square feet, where we have the ability to add additional floor space because we have high bay areas within which we can add floors. We have seven SMD lines, but there, as an example, we have the opportunity to partner with outside vendors to supplement our SMD lines because there are portions of manufacturing flow that can be relatively easily contracted out to the right kinds of partners. And we have the opportunity to, you know, add capacity in a variety of ways with respect to those portions of the manufacturing process that are what you might call key to chip making, where there's a higher, much higher level of proprietorship in the processes and some of the equipment. And again, we can do that within the Federal Street facility, the 250,000 square feet facility in Andover. And medium to long term, we're going to be doing that elsewhere as well.
Okay, thank you. One.
And we have another question coming from the line of Alan Six. Please proceed.
Good afternoon. Congratulations on good progress you're making on all fronts.
Thank you.
My question is on the server market. It sounds like you have one big customer, and it can be lumpy from quarter to quarter. Feel about where are you in the penetration of that market, and within that particular customer also.
So I think I've answered to some degree your question earlier. I may be repeating myself to some extent, but with respect to an early adopter, we're making progress with respect to further expansion or opportunity with next generation Intel processors and memory slots. We're also penetrating other key players in that general space, companies that have, vertically integrated the center structures, and it's more than one that is involved at various stages of engagement. And as I suggested earlier, we're also making progress with respect to companies that manufacture servers, but they don't have their own data centers. So the summary of it is that the value proposition in terms of high efficiency, higher density, lower total cost of ownership, greater scalability, the ability to address escalating requirements with next generation Intel processors that may demand much higher peak current capability than past generation devices did, for which our unique proprietary technology is extremely well suited, unlike the competitive alternative. All of these factors are drivers in the right direction in terms of motivating a multiplicity of customers, either users or manufacturer servers, to adopt our solution.
Okay, so it sounds like you have a multi-year opportunity for penetrating that market quite a bit more.
Yeah, we see it as a key market for us. We are more and more focused on it, and our structure internally to make the most of the opportunity has been expanding and become more focused. It is not the only market we're pursuing, but we're certainly putting the spotlight on it because we see tremendous opportunity in that market.
Okay. And in communications, would you say you're very early in penetrating that market again?
We are making progress. I think we're going to be seeing a greater opportunity, I think, as this year progresses into next year. And it's not to take away from other markets, industrial markets, transportation markets. Market in which we're also making progress, or defense market for that matter.
Yeah, it sounds like your traditional markets are picking up. What about, one of the wild cards would be, supercomputer market? I know you've had some big orders in the past. Is that still an area you're looking at?
Absolutely, yeah. So those opportunities have not gone away. They may be changing shape, and the companies involved may be changing and expanding to some degree. But the value proposition, if anything, for us has grown because what we have to offer, again, in terms of the key attribute that set a power system apart from a competitive alternative, density, efficiency, transient response, peak power capability, and cost effectiveness, those value attributes have grown for us at a rate that has exceeded the competitive alternative.
Okay, and can you give an update on your progress in the auto market?
I think I may have answered the question a little earlier. So we are making progress. There are some initial opportunities are not huge volume, but they are real production requirements that are coming up this year. And I think, as I mentioned earlier, with some of the new products that are on the pipeline, some very close up, like the first NBM, some of the third generation PRMs, the combination of the two for low voltage systems, and our two-stage DCMs, we see growing opportunities in that market. It's a market that's been one we focused on, that we have targeted as being very strategic from a number of years ago. I think we cautioned everybody to be very patient with respect to it, because, you know, while it moves faster than it used to, it's still a market that's got a very long gestation phase.
Okay. And I had a question. Do you still own the building in the San Jose area, West Corner?
Yeah, we are about actually to lease it and derive some pretty nice income.
Okay, good. Then one last question. PiCor looks like it, revenue has quadrupled from the first quarter. What do you expect going forward from here?
I expect it to keep progressing in the right direction. I think, you know, PiCor is at some initial product introductions. They've been primarily focused on some key opportunities, and you're beginning to see some of the manifestation of that focus in early revenues and early progression in revenues. But there is a very broad range of very exciting products, 48-volt input products that perform all the classic regulator functions, buck boost, buck and boost, with very unique attributes of density, efficiency, and cost effectiveness. They are coming up as part of the same strategy with respect to enabling a model of solutions to power systems, in this particular case, using a packaging technology, which is in and of itself not proprietary, but leveraging within it a control system and a power conversion topology that is very proprietary. So we see growing opportunities for our SIPs under the PiCor umbrella, and there's more of those coming, a lot more in coming months.
Okay. Again, congratulations on all the progress you're making, and thank you.
Thank you. If there is one more question, we're getting close to the end.
All right, and your last question comes from the line of Jim Bartlett. Please proceed.
Conference call. Susie, you were talking about your optimism that you could get back to a 20% operating margin. Would that be compatible with a number you all, percentage you also were talking about, I don't know how near-term, long-term was, 15% R&D, or it would 20% be compatible with something closer to 10% investment in R&D?
So let's start with gross margins. I think you heard me in the past say, and I repeat today, that with our new products, we expect to achieve, and in some cases we already achieved, margins that are greater than the margins that we achieved in the 55, 60, 65% area with bricks in the early going in the 80s and 90s. These new products being as differentiated, as proprietary, and as high performance as ever, and given the high level of investment we made in them, deserve to achieve margins, gross margins, that are up there to reflect, again, the level of innovation and value they deliver to customers. So starting with that, the operating model needs to take into account the high level of investment we made and continue to make in R&D. And you made reference to a 16% level. That's a good number to think of in terms of our typical R&D budget. We intend to keep it, you know, up there, even though I suggested earlier, because of the fact that these, at least for the foreseeable future, a lot less of the R to be done and just a lot more D. We think we can accomplish that for quite some time without expanding R&D resources at a rate that is commensurate with the expansion in the top line. So there may be an opportunity to take the R&D operating expenses down a little bit as the top line grows. And likewise, you heard, I think, Jamie suggest that when it comes to the sales and marketing infrastructure, we have a corresponding opportunity because we've led the growth in revenues by, you know, building up that infrastructure to pursue, you know, customer engagements upfront of products and opportunities. And that, at this point, has achieved a level of structure and capability that supports considerably higher levels of revenue. So all of that, to your point, should, before too long, drop to the bottom line at levels that will escalate as we bring the center of gravity of our product mix to higher margins. And again, a lot of that when it comes to the VR chip products is really one of capacity utilization because, as you heard me say in the past, that's a business model that has got a high fixed cost structure because the packaging technology and manufacturing processes are like the ones for PICO and SIPS. The chip platform in terms of packaging technology is very proprietary. So we have a large contingent of resources that have been focused on enabling that packaging technology, and we're going to be seeing over the next few years that investment bear fruit by bringing the unit cost down, leveraging the fixed cost to a much higher top line. So obviously, as I suggested earlier, as we look at the manufacturing rates for chips next year growing by a large multiple, that's going to have a very beneficial effect in terms of unit costs and margins for those products as well. So in summary, we're looking at margins going up while operating expenses come down, and the combination of the two will lead to a healthy bottom line that should expand over time.
Sounds good to me. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, thank you, and we look forward to talking to you in a month and a half or two. Take care.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect. Have a great day.